From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It has been 3 weeks since President Donald Trump's inauguration, and the pace of developments from his administration is swift, to say the least, as well as the response of resistance from states like California. A lot of these executive actions are tied to federal funding and can have dramatic impacts to disaster relief, law enforcement, and local budgets. So we're going to pull off the gas just a little bit and spend some time breaking down the barrage of headlines. Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook and joins us with the latest in California's response to the Trump administration. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. What a month it's been already.
I know. I was looking at the calendar last time you were on. It was just about 2 weeks ago. It was the day after the inauguration. So about 3 weeks ago, actually. And I mean, I imagine you would have expected there to be an overhaul to some extent with the incoming new administration. It's a dramatic departure from the Biden administration. But has the rate of developments exceeded your expectations as a political journalist?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone would pretty much agree on that point. I mean, whether you want to call it a fire hose, a gauntlet, an avalanche, it really has been unprecedented. I don't think there's been no modern presidency where there's been such a flurry of executive orders, orders targeting states like blue states like California. It's just nothing like it before.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of line item, go by each development and get some more context from you. We talked about this a good amount in the weeks leading up to the inauguration. California lawmakers, Trump-proofing the state, $50 million in resources. That movement was delayed due to the wildfires in Los Angeles at the start of the year, but Governor Newsom signed that package into law on Friday. What are the details?
Yeah, so this is a pretty broad legal defense fund that the state can use. State Attorney General Rob Bonta can use to sue the Trump administration when his policies conflict with state policy. And it could be used for anything from immigration to reproductive rights to LGBT rights to funding fights over grants that cities and counties in the state get from the federal government. It's a really broad package. And one thing that really stood out to me last week was just sort of how low-key Newsom was when he signed that bill. He signed it Friday, late Friday, and he was the one who called this special session right after Trump got elected last year. You know, he wanted to do this big Trump-proofing effort. He stresses the fact that Newsom himself hasn't used the words Trump-proofing. He likes to point that out, but that really was the intent, at least initially, of this special session. But when it came time to sign the bill, the governor just put out, you know, a memo to journalists on Friday with a short signing message on the bill saying, you know, that he'd signed it. And it really kind of speaks to the way he seems to be trying to buddy up to Trump in the wake of the fires and, you know, make sure that California is getting on the president's good side as it tries to get aid for the LA fire victims.
Yeah, well, Newsom did travel to D.C. last week. Was that motivation largely for wildfire relief?
Yeah, I think the fires really changed everything. The governor is making a full court press to buddy up to Trump. He met with him for 90 minutes in the Oval Office. You know, and these are two guys that have routinely traded barbs over the years. But it's the L.A. fires have pushed the governor to want to really need to buddy up to the president. And, you know, it wasn't just their meeting in D.C. last week. We saw this when Trump was, down in L.A. visiting the damaged area. And Newsom greeted him at the airport and, you know, shaked his hand and gave him a hug. The governor really is trying to ingratiate himself. And I think the politics have just changed for the governor. Fighting with Trump day in and day out is not the path that he's choosing because the state needs this support and assistance.
Do you think it's effective, this change of course, and maybe the tone kind of diminishing a little bit?
It seems to have been. You know, we're not seeing Trump attack Newsom in the way that he used to so regularly. It was, you know, and not that long ago that he was routinely calling him news scum in tweets and social media posts. You know, he likes to have these nicknames attacking people. But Trump has been a lot friendlier to Newsom after the governor's made this effort to buddy up to him. And, you know, I think that's a constant with Donald Trump. He likes the optics. He likes the camera, you know, what the camera shows. And he likes, you know, someone like Newsom going out of his way to be kind to the president and ingratiate himself.
Yeah. Well, I want to also go back to the first Trump presidency just for a moment, because then Governor Jerry Brown, then AG Javier Becerra, they filed dozens of lawsuits during the first Trump presidency. How does Governor Newsom and Attorney General Bonta's response compare so far?
What's been really interesting to me is the two different lanes that they're running in. Newsom is doing this olive branch effort to build the relationship with Trump. At the same time, Rob Bonta is full into the California resistance, and he's leading multiple lawsuits already pushing back on Trump's executive orders. And I asked Bonta about that when I had a chance to chat with him last week. And he said very plainly that the governor has his lane, I have mine, and we're both going down our lanes as fast as we can. And so I think it is a shift from the first Trump administration, when both the governor, Governor Jerry Brown and Javier Becerra, then the attorney general, they were both pretty critical of Trump. Now Newsom is playing nice while Rob Bonta is running the legal defense. And I think that's a very intentional strategy on both of their parts.
Yeah, when further unpacking this tone shift among California Democratic leaders in response to the second administration, yeah, I want to get a temperature check on where things stand, because as you just laid out, it can differ depending on who we are talking about. When it comes to our two senators, Adam Schiff, Alex Padilla, how are they doing? How are they responding? Do they diverge, or are they more in solidarity?
I would say the two senators are pretty much in solidarity. Both of them have been a lot more outspoken than the governor in calling out President Trump for executive orders they disagree with and things they think are illegal or unconstitutional. Where they have been different are the issues where they choose to focus. Senator Padilla has always been very focused on immigration issues. You know, his family's own immigrant background, I think, inspires that. And he's been very focused on defending birthright citizenship and speaking out about Trump's efforts to roll back that constitutional right that has been observed of birthright citizenship in the U.S. Whereas Schiff, I think, has been a lot more focused on kind of the levers of the separation of powers in Washington, the ability of Congress to control the purse strings and decide what, you know, how money is allocated in the budget. And Schiff has been very outspoken about objecting to Elon Musk's Doge effort and that new federal department that is tasked with finding spending cuts. And Schiff has been very concerned and outspoken about saying that this is, in his view, that it's not legal for Musk to have control of Treasury payment systems and to be making some of these kind of unilateral calls. So I think it's, the two senators are on the same page with their beliefs on how they respond to Trump, but focusing on very different areas and, you know, kind of focusing on their pet areas as they try to help the state play defense.
Yeah, well, when it comes to DOGE, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency, I mean, that has been dominating coverage as well. Elon Musk at the helm of that. And you just touched upon this, a federal judge over the weekend, I believe, blocked the Musk team from accessing those Treasury Department records. Elon Musk no longer lives in California, but I think his impact and his deep ties probably still very much exist in this state. How are lawmakers responding to Elon Musk's new role with the Trump administration?
The majority of California's delegation on the Hill has been pretty vocal in speaking out about this. Last week, there was video after video of House members like Maxine Waters or Latifah Simon or Robert Garcia, some of the more well-known members of California's delegation. They were showing up at federal departments buildings in the Capitol and protesting outside with megaphones and, you know, demanding to be let in to meet with agency heads. This is as DOGE officials were inside and getting into, you know, the computer and data systems of these agencies. You definitely have that very outspoken pushback. And then you have others in the delegation, like Democrat Ro Khanna from Silicon Valley. He's tried to play nice with Musk and, you know, has tried to meet with him and, you know, has been texting with him back and forth. They're friends going back a lot of years. But Ro Khanna hasn't seen a lot of success from that effort. Him and Musk are sparring on Twitter now in his effort to try to redirect Musk to look at spending areas related to defense or, you know, the military that Democrats might want to cut. That just hasn't been successful. So overall, I would say there's a lot of frustration among our delegation about the role that Elon is playing as an unelected private citizen.
Yeah, it seems like a total 180 when you look back to Elon Musk's, you know, role in Silicon Valley and in California to the relationship that he has with state leaders now?
Yeah. I mean, the relationship, there was an evolution over the years. We saw things deteriorate gradually. But yeah, it wasn't that long ago that he was friendly with some Democrats in California. It was only maybe a year and a half ago that he was at the opening of a Tesla facility in California with Governor Newsom. And that deteriorating relationship really has taken a complete turn. And now he's completely at odds with the majority of Democrats in power in California.
Yeah. We had Representative Ami Bera on the show a little over a week ago. He represents the northern part of Sacramento County. And he touched upon this kind of soul searching that's taking place since Trump got the popular vote for this election. And more Californians also voted for Trump this go around compared to 2016. Is this isolated, or do you see this among other California Congress members as well?
Yeah, I think that the soul searching is real. The party is at large. The party is very much lost in the wilderness right now and deciding how they want to respond to Trump. And I think, you know, the different tactics you see among California's delegation in Congress or even statewide elected officials in California, you see completely different, ends of the spectrum. You have folks really trying to buddy up to Trump, ingratiate themselves, saying the party needs to, you know, be more moderate and that the party needs to not, you know, go Trump resistance full on out of the gate. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is you have progressives in the state saying, let's be on the offensive from the very beginning. And we need to fight DOGE. We need to fight federal spending cuts and all these executive orders. I think the party is very conflicted between those who feel like that it needs to moderate to make a comeback or those that feel like it needs to be true to its progressive roots and fight Trump every step of the way. And it's, you know, I think one architect of the party's messaging in the past that's really interesting to watch in this moment is Nancy Pelosi. And she's not doing either of those things, really. I would say she's somewhere more in the middle, and she's kind of being more strategic and tactical about the things where she's attacking Trump. She's emphasizing drug costs, protecting the Affordable Care Act, opposing tax breaks for billionaires and the richest Americans. So Nancy Pelosi is kind of out there in the middle trying to chart a potential new direction for the party. But at large, the party is still trying to figure out the path.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Okay, in this morning's edition of California Playbook, you write about a lawsuit that was filed from San Francisco and Santa Clara counties, but it could also have impacts to other local governments that are pushing back against Trump's immigration stance and policies and executive actions. So the Trump administration wants to pull federal law enforcement funding for local governments designated as sanctuary cities. What stands out to you about this development?
Yeah, in the lawsuit that San Francisco and these other cities and counties filed late last week, their complaint back was very targeted in saying that they feel like this is an attempt by the federal government to conscript local law enforcement, police and sheriffs to enforce federal immigration law. And so they're not even so much making this argument about the money. That is part of their case, but they're saying that this is a breach of the separation of powers. And that, I think that's a really interesting argument that that we haven't seen yet from cities arguing that the president is trying to essentially, you know, commandeer local law enforcement so they can be under his control. And then on the flip side, Republicans and Trump are emphasizing this idea that, you know, that sanctuary cities are harboring dangerous criminals, and they're kind of painting sanctuary city laws and California sanctuary state law with a very broad brush and emphasizing, you know, cases where it might make it a little more difficult for someone with a criminal record to be apprehended by ICE. Those are kind of the very, very different competing arguments at this point.
How big of a dent is federal funding for local law enforcement agencies?
I mean, it's significant. I mean, statewide, you know, between all the different sanctuary jurisdictions, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars for local police. I think this will definitely be tested in the courts. It's definitely unclear whether the federal administration has authority to pull back funding for police, funding that was approved by Congress. I think that piece is going to be fought out in the courts over many months and probably years.
It also stood out to me that you mentioned that Los Angeles didn't take part in this lawsuit. They're a sanctuary city as well. Do you think that that has some ties to, you know, needing that federal assistance due to those wildfires that took place last month?
Absolutely. I mean, the city hasn't fully explained why it's not involved with this lawsuit, because it is, like you said, a sanctuary city. But I think LA Mayor Karen Bass and officials in the city, they realize the moment that LA faces right now with getting federal funding to recover for the fires. And so they just don't want to be in the crosshairs of Trump or his administration. And so that seems like a very clear strategy to me.
Yeah. Also on the immigration front, and this is an interesting development, the FCC is investigating KCBS, that's a radio station in San Francisco, for its coverage of immigration enforcement actions in San Jose. What can you tell us about this? Because this touches upon First Amendment rights.
Yeah, this case really caught a lot of people's eyes last week. The new FCC chair under Donald Trump is investigating KCBS and you know, alleging that the station violated the law by reporting on the location of these ICE raids. And this is just completely unprecedented in a lot of ways. Media outlets routinely report on law enforcement activity when there's major busts or raids or sweeps. A lot of outlets report on that. But in this case, you know, the Trump administration is trying to set a precedent where they don't want real-time reporting about ICE's operations. And this comes as the president, reports suggest, is growing increasingly frustrated about the pace of deportations. He wanted more deportations a lot faster, and it's just in practice been more difficult than the administration hoped. So I think that is a big piece of this. But yeah, this case will be litigated for a long time, but it could, you know, really impact the precedent around freedom of speech with media outlets being able to report in real time on law enforcement activity.
Yeah. In the last minute or so we have, I mean, there have been a lot of executive orders that have taken place, and we dive deeper into them, you know, on Insight segments. But I want to look ahead just quickly to the midterm, because that really is just around the corner. I know it feels like, you know, 2026 is, you know, light years away, but in the world of politics, that's far from the case. You know, with this soul searching that's happening within the party and maybe some disagreement about how to move forward, do you think there's a consensus among the Democratic Party about how to move forward? Because I would imagine they want to gain more seats in Congress come the midterms.
I don't think there is a consensus. You know, like I hinted at earlier, the party split between those who want to moderate and be nice to Trump and those who want to, you know, really shift more towards the party's progressive roots. And I think, you know, the direction that Nancy Pelosi is trying to get the party to go is that focusing on those kitchen table issues like healthcare, drug prices. And she gave an interesting interview last week where she said in 6 or 7 months, the conversation around the party's direction in the midterms is going to be much different. And I thought that was just a really compelling prediction of how the party might try to get the focus back on drugs and drug prices and things like, you know, guaranteeing coverage for pre-existing conditions under the Affordable Care Act. I think the question now is whether people like Nancy Pelosi, the longtime architects of the party's direction, are going to be able to kind of get the majority to go along with them on that path. Mm.
Last 30 seconds or so that we have, let's get a pulse check on the governor's race, because that's going to be here in 2026 as well.
It's really heating up quick. Rob Bonta jumped out last week. He had seriously been thinking about the race, and he decided not to get in after hearing the buzz that Kamala Harris and Katie Porter are both looking at the race very seriously. Those two are really the heavyweights at this point. It's already a crowded field, but if either of them were to get in, they would surely have a lot of momentum right out the gate, especially Harris. I think everyone is sort of watching at this point if the former vice president is interested in the job.
Yeah. Dustin, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook and joins us with the latest in California's response to the Trump administration. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.